agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It is the 27th day of August, 2015. Happy anniversary to my lovely wife, Claire Ann. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Take a look at nutrient loss on the farm and what producers might be able to do next week at Farm Progress Show to begin to get an idea of how much nitrogen may be coming out of their tile lines. And then, as we finish up our program, we'll talk about the weather forecast with Mike Tenor of T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. And, Matt Bennett will be here, too, from Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois, to take a look at the cash grain market on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, let's check the numbers as they finished up. September contract at 363 and three quarters, up 2 cents in the corn pit. December 375, that's a penny and three quarters higher. And the March contract, 2 cents higher at 386 and a quarter. May futures at 392 and three quarters, up two for the day. And July contract at 397, up 2 cents. Next year's December, 399 and a quarter, up three and three quarters. From the soy complex, bean futures September contract, 8.5 cents higher at $8.86 and a quarter. November at 879, 14 higher. In January at 883 and three quarters, up 15 and a quarter. March contract up 15 and three quarters at $8.85. Next year's July soybeans, $8.91 and three quarters, up 16, and the November up 12 and a quarter at $8.73. Bean meal $1.50 lower at $3.22.90. The bean oil up 77 cents at $26.89. Soft red winter wheat in the September down 5.5 at $4.84 and a quarter. July at $5.06 and three quarters for next year, the harvest month, a penny and a quarter lower. The hard red July at $5.22.5. Down one for the afternoon. Live cattle futures August contract $2 lower at $144.42.5. October futures up $2.20 per 100 pounds at $142.57.5. August feeder cattle at $2.10 down 27.5 cents. And September futures there at $200.37.5 up $2.27.5. Lean hogs October contract $66.92.5 down 7.5 cents. December down 40. They finished at $61.90. This, of course, is Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Checking some of the outside markets, energies, October contract for the crude oil at $42.06. It's up $3.46. September futures in the ethanol at $1.42.9, or a penny and 4 cents higher. The wholesale price of gasoline up 8.9 cents at $1.44.4. And heating oil or diesel fuel up a dime and a half at $1.48.5. Natural gas at 264 is down 5.3 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 16,364, about 115 points higher. The dollar is at 95.64, up 0.5, and gold futures at $1,122.25, or $1.95 lower. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Mostly clear with a low of 57 degrees. And then tomorrow, sunny skies, a high of 82. South winds tomorrow at 6 to 14, the gust to 18. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, a low of 64. Four on a south-southeast wind that'll run at about 10 miles an hour. Saturday, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, partly sunny. A high of 82 degrees, south-southwest winds at 10 to 15. They'll gust to 20. Chance of precip set at 30% for Saturday. And Saturday night, the rainfall will clear out. A low of 64 under mostly cloudy skies. Mostly sunny by the time we get to Sunday, with a high of 83 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's the 27th day of August, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. Dan Zwicker is Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, is with us to take a look at the marketplace. Thanks, Dan, for taking the time with us this afternoon. I suspect you did a little digging around to see what was happening in the marketplace and saw the little pop in the soybeans. What'd you make of that for the day? It kind of surprised me, I suppose.
Well, Thursdays are, you know, counter-trend days, so a higher Thursday is not really a good omen for how we're going to close out the week. But I do like the price action that we've had. I mean, we started out Monday, you know, with a lot of spillover bearishness from the macro situation, the stock market crash and all of the equity markets throughout the world that spilled on over into the commodity complex. And basically since then, we've been able to kind of stabilize and get our footing in here. Now, you know, our supply demand tables, if USDA is right on the yield projections, and then of course the Pro Farmer Tour pretty well confirmed that we do have a good sized crop coming. Now we can maybe argue a little bit about the yield, a bushel here or a bushel there. The next big thing that's going to come at us is going to be some acreage changes because the FSA report that came out here a couple weeks ago did indicate that planted or prevent plant acres may be higher than what USDA's got plugged into the balance sheets. But they're going to get another look at those numbers, you know, in September. But here we are. I mean, the combines are starting to roll. It's going to, and they're just going to do nothing but, you know, increase in numbers as time goes forward. So it's going to be tough to kind of get a good rally going in this market. But on the other hand, I think with current day prices, producers are going to be real reluctant sellers. And I think that alone may offer some underlying support because I do think with this price break that we've had, we have seen a pickup of end-user demand. I mean, we did see some of it in the export picture here this morning. We did get a nice export sales number of new crop beans with an additional sale that will be included in next week's report. The corn sales number really wasn't all that bad for new crop. We did go backwards a little bit, I guess, on old crop. But I think you're going to see end-user demand begin to come forward here and offer some pretty good support to this market, which I think, you know, while the farmer maybe isn't sold up enough or sold as much as he would like to have been sold, I don't think there's hardly any end-user coverage on the books because they've been waiting around for lower prices. So that kind of looks to be kind of a standoff. But I think as we go on into harvest, farmers have added additional bin space. This year's carryout numbers are much smaller than what the trade was looking at 6 months ago. So it'll be interesting to see what happens as we go forward. But with that said, if you look at any seasonal charts, the September is a pretty strong down month. I mean, it's kind of like July. If you would sell corn the 1st of July and buy it back at the end of July, or beans, the odds would be 8 out of 10 years you'd probably have a profit in it. Now, that's going to come at us here in September. If you sell corn or beans September 1st and buy them back September 30th, the odds would be pretty good that you'd have a profit in it. We don't know what kind of profit. It may be only a penny, but the odds of closing lower for the month of September is quite high. But this year may be a little different since we're going into harvest with prices mostly below cost of production. I do think, though, if the farmers do get in the field and those yields do turn out to be much bigger than what he was expecting, then we've got problems because then you're going to see some bushels come to town. But I don't think the grain commercial grain trade really has any ownership to speak of. And they're going to want some ownership. I mean, they're going to want to fill up their bins. They're going to want to earn some storage charges. They're going to want to capture some carry into the marketplace. So there may be more stability underneath this market than what a lot of people think at this point in time.
What is the case for soybeans? Because those are oftentimes sold across the scale more often than corn, certainly. Is there a different solution for that crop than there is for soybean or for corn?
Well, the thing that when you look at a corn-soybean ratio, it does kind of follow a five-year pattern from low to low, and we are now moving in the direction in the favor of corn. And I think over the next 12 months or 18 months, we will take the corn-soybean ratio kind of down into the 2-to-1, maybe 1.8-to-1. So soybeans have the most downside price vulnerability, I think, as we go forward down the road. And a lot of that is because South America now has turned into a year-round supplier of soybeans. And with the currency of the real having weakened sharply or strengthened, they can make some pretty good money, and we're going to see an increase in soybean plantings in South America. And if USA is correct with their yield projections, you know, our carryout begins to grow, you know, above that 300, 400 mark. That is just a real burdensome supply of soybeans. My guess is, you know, if we're going to talk about, let's say, 350 corn, 2-to-1 kind of puts it at $7 soybeans or 750 soybeans. So probably at this point, if corn can kind of stabilize here at 350, soybeans probably have a downside price vulnerability of coming down into the 750 area. I was looking at a long-term trend line. That is where trend line support would fall into place on a lead monthly chart. So there is some downside price vulnerability, and the South is going to be the ones that will move those soybeans right off the combine into the elevator system. The export trade relies on those southern acres, whether it's corn or beans, to fill a lot of their early commitments, and that's coming out of Arkansas and Mississippi and Tennessee and the Blue Hill of Missouri.
Well, on that happy note, I think we'll let you go for the day. I do appreciate
it. Well, hopefully I can, things will get a little more positive, but I do think the macro situation, you can clearly see it is a mess. Our policymakers, with 0% interest rates here for about 10 years, has really got themselves in a box. They need to raise them. But as soon as you raise them, then the stock market comes crashing down. And so they're kind of in a box that I kind of enjoy watching to see how this one's going to play out, because the economy is growing with today's GDP numbers. And then I do think you're going to start seeing inflation begin to take hold, and they're going to be forced to raise interest rates. And when they raise interest rates, the stock market's going to come down, crashing all the more. So we do have a big bubble there that's going to be turbulence, I think, over into the grain market. But we've kind of taken the bubble out of the commodity markets over the past couple of years. So there's not much left to kind of take out, any kind of air to take out of the commodity market.
We'll talk with you again next week.
Thanks, okay, Dan. Very well.
Dan Zwicker, of course, is with Zwicker Consulting. He is in Waco, Texas. Well, we're less than a week away now from the beginning of the Farm Progress Show. Next Tuesday kicks off in Decatur, Illinois. We sure do hope you'll visit us at the University of Illinois tent. I'll be there live with the closing market report during the 2 o'clock hour, and Orion Samuelson will be on stage at the U of I tent during the 10 o'clock hour. Both hours, I'll be organizing what happens up on stage, and many of our analysts have already agreed to drop by, and of course, there'll be some U of I folks there too. Drop by and visit us either at 10 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the University of Illinois tent. We're located at the corner of West Avenue and 3rd Street. Really, when you come in the main gate of the Farm Progress Show, just turn to your right, go about a block and a half, and you'll find the U of I tent. When you do come to the Farm Progress Show, actually before you come to the Farm Progress Show, make sure you go out to a tile line and take an 8-ounce sample of water. The corn growers are doing something really unique. They're going to run a test that identifies the nitrate level in the water sample you provide. That process is going to be free of charge. The results will remain completely confidential. In fact, they won't take any information at all other than to give you the numbers back from your sample of water. And they'd like that to come out of your tile lines. I talked to Tricia Braid. She's with the Illinois Corn Growers and serves as their communications director about the project.
Well, Todd, we're inviting farmers to bring water samples from their farm. We'd like to see it come out of their tile lines or any streams or waterways or farm ponds that they might have on the property. You can bring a sample of tap water if that's what you want to do. Bring it to our booth. The lot number is 355 at the Farm Progress Show, Tuesday through Thursday, September 1st through the 3rd. And what we'll do is a free confidential test of the nitrate level in that water. Now, why is that important? Well, because farmers want to keep the nutrients that they've applied for the crop where the crop needs it. If it's starting to move out your tiles, that's lost money to the farmers, and it also is a potential problem for water quality. So we're really working on awareness here and helping people get an understanding of what nitrogen movement means on their farms.
And my understanding is that the hope is that producers, farm owners, landowners understand how much nitrogen is coming off of their properties, where that moves to, and then that they might be able to better regulate it themselves, as opposed, I guess, for regulators to step in and make that happen through legislation.
Right. So it's definitely an awareness issue as we're taking a look at what's happening in Iowa with those lawsuits. We saw the executive action that was taken in the Chesapeake Bay that has really impacted how farmers can apply nutrients. Talking about nutrient management plans out there, that it's a lot more work for individual farmers. What we'd like to see here in Illinois are these voluntary actions, so voluntary adoption of best management practices so that we can keep those nutrients where they belong and out of the waterways. It's also related, Todd, to the recent release of the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy, the document that was put forth by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency and the Illinois Department of Agriculture that set some goals for all of the stakeholders in Illinois to achieve with regard to nutrients in the waterways. So agriculture plays a big part of that. We're not the only people involved. We understand that, but we certainly do have a role to play. So the example we have for the Decatur area, that's where the Farm Progress Show is going to be, is that on average, tile-drained ground in that Decatur area, which is in the Upper Sangamon watershed, loses about 26 pounds of nitrogen per acre per year. So that adds up. And if it's leaving your tile, it's not helping the crop, it's going somewhere where it's unintended. So we really just want folks to start understanding more about how those nutrients are moving at different times of the year. So if you're bringing a water sample to Farm Progress Show, you might be thinking, well, it doesn't matter right now. Well, it just matters in the sense of taking that information back to your farm, considering what your rainfall has been recently, what application you made, and just putting it into a larger picture to think about what you can do differently.
Tricia Braid is the Director of Communications for the Illinois Corn Growers Association. If you'd like to have your tile line water tested free of charge and absolutely confidential, you can do that next week at the Farm Progress Show. Just bring a sample in a clean container. It needs to be 8 ounces in size. to the Illinois Corn Growers Association tent. It is exhibit number 355. The container should be clean, free of residual chemicals and detergents. You need to bring at least 8 ounces of water. Probably ought to take that within 48 hours of coming to the Farm Progress Show. That morning is best. If it's prior to that, make sure it's refrigerated. Otherwise, you just bring it that day. If you want to get a better estimate, stick a 5-gallon bucket under your tile line and count off how many seconds it takes to fill that 5-gallon bucket, or any other, you know, if you have a gallon or a quart size, something that you can measure exact. And figure out the number of seconds it takes to fill, and then bring that all to the Corn Growers Association, and they will run the nitrate test for you. It's free of charge, and it's also absolutely confidential at the Farm Progress Show next week. Let's check the cash grain market now. We're joined by Matt Bennett. He is with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois, also a farmer there. Matt, thanks so much. I understand you've been on the road this week. Where have you been?
Well, I went out east. I was in Maryland and then Pennsylvania. Came back over to Lansing, and then I was in Lafayette this morning. So I was on the west leg of the crop tour last week, and I'm on the east leg of my own crop tour this week, I guess.
And then what did farmers tell you from one side of that eastern corn belt to the other? And then, of course, you were out in Pennsylvania as well.
Well, a fairly general theme that I've heard all week is that everybody needs the rain. So, you know, most of these guys didn't, you know, they were wanting the rain to quit earlier in the year, and now they can't seem to buy one. So, you know, it's not been a very good combination for a lot of these guys. Definitely saw some crops that they looked the greatest. But, you know, I guess they're going to have to do with it the best they can. But I think the eastern belt definitely has been affected just as much as what the tour said and then some.
What do you think USDA will show us in September? Will it change very much? I know the Pro Farmer Tour was down about 4 bushels from what USDA had predicted in August.
Yeah, I think that, you know, they don't like to take a huge bite at a time, as you know, most generally, but I think that this could be one of those Septembers where we see a pretty significant reduction, at least relative to what they usually do, especially whenever you look at that implied ear weight. I think that even guys from USDA would probably admit that it might not have been the best move, especially with all the stress we've had this year. It's just tough to build a big ear with all the stress we've had, especially in the eastern belt.
Will the soybean crop get bigger?
Well, I don't know. That's a tough question because definitely in the western belt, the moisture has been in abundance. But then a lot of guys in the eastern corn belt are saying, you know, I need rain. I need it soon. We've got a few beans turning now. We've been fortunate enough to catch a couple of rains, but not everyone has caught rain here in the last couple, 3 weeks. So I think it's going to be another one of those things where the west side is a little better than what the east is. It's going to be tough to figure that out, but I don't know that it's going to grow from last report.
All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Yep. Thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting. He is in Windsor, Illinois, has been flying for Channel Seeds across the eastern Corn Belt over the last 4 or 5 days. And we'll talk with him again next Thursday at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur. You can join us there, too, in the Illinois tent.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
It's the Feast of St. Monica, patron of homemakers and housewives. On this day in agricultural history in 1859, Colonel Edwin L. Drake drilled the first successful oil well in the U.S. near Titusville, Pennsylvania. The drilling hit oil at 69 feet 6 inches when under the derrick floor was seen a dark film floating on the water. In 1874, Carl Bosch was born, a German industrial chemist He directed the development of the industrial scale processes for production of ammonia from atmospheric nitrogen. He eventually won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry for devising chemical high-pressure methods, like that which produced ammonia out of nitrogen and hydrogen gases. In 1879, Sir Rowland Hill died, an English educator. He was the inventor of the penny postage system, with the first adhesive postage stamp in 1840. In 1928, the Kellogg-Briand Pact was signed in Paris. It outlawed war and provided for the peaceful settlement of disputes. And in 1998, former U.S. Agriculture Secretary Mike Espy was charged with accepting more than $35,000 in gifts from companies that did business with USDA. He was eventually found innocent, but seven others were found guilty of similar charges. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. On this Thursday afternoon, we're joined now by T-Storm Weather's Mike Tenora to take a look at the weather forecast. Mike, thanks for being with us. I think there's a rainstorm that's in the offing for part of the Midwest. Can you tell me about that system?
Well, if you look off to the north and west, you can see that in Iowa, there are a few showers and thunderstorms out there. That is the beginning of what will be a major rain event for tonight and tomorrow for parts of the northern Corn Belt. Even at this late juncture, it's a bit difficult to figure out exactly where this system is going to drop a lot of rain. That said, we have pretty high confidence that it will most likely be along or north of Interstate 80. And no matter where it ends up, we think around 25 to maybe even 30 or 40% of U.S. corn and soybean production will receive at least a half of an inch of rain from this event, with, say, around 20% to receive over 1 inch of rain. So this is a pretty big event for August. The only real problem with it is that we'd like to see it a little bit further to the south and east as you move into parts of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. Despite all of the rain that we had back in June and July, it is a bit dry right now, and one or two good rains right now would be ideal for soybeans more than corn, and we're not really sure if we're going to see that. Once this system goes through, it's pretty clear that we're going to turn dry once again, and we're going to turn much warmer. Next week will be more like summer than we've seen in a while, with high temperatures well into the 80s and 90s for most of next week.
And then if you turn your attention to other things that are happening across the United States, I guess there's a hurricane that may be coming in towards Florida next week?
Yeah, that is a concern. Right now we have Tropical Storm Erica. It's a little bit far away to be too concerned with it at the moment, but there's an array of evidence that shows that that system is going to move toward the Atlantic side of Florida, so we're talking eastern Florida, say from Miami and points north, and then possibly interact with some warm water around there and affect either the Georgia or South Carolina coastline. Now, the system is not going to even attempt to make landfall until at earliest Sunday, and more than likely not until Monday or Tuesday. We're not really sure exactly how this system is going to play out, but the one thing we do have confidence in is that its remnant circulation later next week is unlikely to move into either the Delta or the Corn Belt. So we're not looking for a lot of rain from this system. Typically for the Corn Belt or Delta to have rain, we need a hurricane to move into the Gulf of Mexico and then move straight on to the north, say similarly to what Hurricane Katrina did 10 years ago. We're not looking for that setup. It would be more toward, again, the other side of Florida and into the Gulf of Mexico. This is one of these situations you just have to watch. We don't have a lot of indications that suggest that would turn into a severe storm, but anytime you have a tropical storm or a hurricane near the United States coastline, you have to keep an eye on it.
Then very quickly, the wheat crop in Australia, how is it faring?
Well, it's interesting what's been happening there. There have been some pretty big rains over the last week in the key areas of eastern Australia. That goes directly in the face of El Nino conditions, which would typically lead to below normal rainfall and drought. Now, we could still see below normal rainfall through the end of the year, But that was a very big event because wheat is jointing now and beginning to head. And when you see a good rain at that time of the year, we all know that that usually tends to help out that crop. We'll still need more rains, but we did receive one good rain so far.
Thanks so much, Mike. Mike Tenura, of course, is with T-Storm Weather. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on this Thursday edition. It's the 27th day of August of the Closing Market Report.